All right, so let's get started again. Continue. So we're gonna take a look at the next portion. So what we've done in the previous lab is essentially just the bottom portion, raw storage, batch, basic kind of transformation that we showed. Next one is gonna be the streaming use cases, how to actually point to, I'll show you an example of an event hub. And I think my cluster's up. So supposedly, if Olivia is working right now with support, they brought up a couple of clusters up. I don't know what happened on my particular subscription, but I probably pissed off somebody at Microsoft today. So let's take a look. So I like this picture. We have a stream of data that's coming in, whatever it is, TCP/IP, Kafka, Event Hub. There's more data than one single node can actually handle.
Is that an Amazon S3?
Firehose. Firehose? So how do you actually solve it? The way that Spark has something called structured streaming. So remember I was saying there's different components. You have the Spark Core, Spark SQL, structured streaming is another component within it. Structured streaming is scalable, fault-tolerant stream processing engine. Some of you might already know some of the others. There's Apache Flink, there's Apache Storm, there's a bunch of different stream processing technologies. At one point, I would say that Spark streaming wasn't even the best. Let's say Apache Flink, I think, was a richer, had a lot of the richer functionality. I think the Apache Spark community caught up and making it just as good. So previously, everything was processed in a microbatch format. Now there's continuous processing using Spark 2.3 as well. The way that why I always advocated for Spark streaming is because you're still using the same API. So if you already know the data frame API, that whether you're using PySpark, Scala, or SQL, you can apply that same syntax on the structured streaming. So this makes your job a lot easier. So what happens? So you have a data stream, you have an unbounded table essentially of data that's already in it, and new rows get appended to this unbounded table. There is something called a trigger interval. So that could be either like every 1 second or every time there is a new file that actually gets loaded. Think of it, if you drop a file onto a file system, whether it's cloud or this, it can trigger and pick up and start processing. Or it can be time-based. Essentially, you have different ways of how you can connect to it. The example that I have that I'm showing is 4B. And what I'm going to show right now, I think, is going to be useful that you can take away at home as well. I'll put this up and share it. There is a GitHub that you can download everything that I'm showing, all these DBC files that you can do it at home. Big apology, guys, that we couldn't do it as a live. But everything can be downloaded. This is the link that I can share with you, or you can write it down. It's github.com/azeltov and then /adb_workshop, Azure Databricks Workshop. There, it tells you how to set everything up, including something called DBC file. DBC is the archive file that has all of these notebooks that I'm demoing right now, so you can easily download them and re-import it back in your environment. So AWS and Azure, they give you free on the AWS, they call it a community. We have a free 2-week trial as well, where you can download it and download all of the notebooks. So everything that you have is all stored on this DBC file. The way that you would do it, you can easily just point to it. You can download this file, and when you get to your workspace, once you set it up, what I'm gonna do is just import this. So just like I showed you create notebook, create library, you can say create import, and you can point to a URL or you can point to the downloaded file. And here's the ADB workshop. What it's gonna do is just gonna import this whole file. It's pretty small, 1.4 megabytes. And here you'll have this at home. So all of these notebooks that I'm showing right now are all available to you. Yes? Yep. The only thing that, remember, I'm using something called the mount points. So point to mount. If you want to use, let's say, Azure Wasp, you would say you would give it a full path. So whenever you connect to something, you would be specifying this full path essentially with the credentials. So in Jupyter, if you're using PySpark, you can point to a local file system if you're using or HDFS, or to your S3 or to Azure. So that's the only difference. This is the Databricks specific. That's the only Databricks specific. And the reason why we went to it is for the simplicity of spinning up Databricks and being able to give this to you, but it backfired. Actually, what do we have? Can we share some of the clusters right now already?
I need to talk on that. I'll be speaking with the support guy. I'll set it right now. Sorry. So, yes, you may use
so one. Technically, right now, you guys, remember, you created your own?
But if you're all in the same, you'll have no individual.
Yeah, so make sure that your piece of paper, technically, you can run. It says user 36, so within a particular cluster,
only
two up, so you have to spread it. So I don't know how many people we have, 40.
Of the room, right?
Yeah, essentially. But spread it out. Don't hit it all at once. They will run right now. So it just might take a little bit longer, but you should be able to go to your home folder. Remember, we cloned the folders, so go to yours. Don't modify somebody else's. But you'll be able to run the code. But I'm talking a lot, so pay attention to me. And this environment will be up, so you can it's not... I think if the subscription dies tomorrow, the free trial, so you have it till tomorrow. All right, so within the notebooks that you guys have downloaded, there is two examples. There is a streaming lab with a file system, and there is streaming with event hubs. The event hubs can be easily ported to Apache Kafka. So all it is they use very similar kind of notations. I'm showing right now an example that has with event hubs. What you would have to do is, remember I showed you how to install a library. You would have to install, if you wanted to connect with the optional one, you would run this lab. And let me show this. You copy this Maven coordinate. You go to library, create library, choose a Maven coordinate, which one you wanted, and then you would choose create library. Now this, I should already have it, but you can say, I want to attach it to a particular cluster. So I'm saying, okay, I want to attach it to cluster Apache. And it's going to show me, okay, it's attaching. Once it's attached, it'll notify saying it's attached, and I should be able to run my examples. But if you want to run from your examples, you would connect to file system, because I didn't put in the keys. So the keys is what needs to be set up if you want to connect to an event hub, to an external. This is self-contained. So let's take a look at the example. The first thing that you have to do is define a data frame. With structured streaming, you always have to define schema. In regular ETL, you can infer the schema. In streaming, you always have to have the schema defined. This is not for this. This is not going to be for this. Give me a second. This is going to be the schema for the streaming data frame. And what we're doing is essentially simulating a file system to read from a file system, and I'm going to trigger it every second to pick up new files. So this is the file. It's a bunch of CSV files, and we're going to be reading from this orders data. So previous lab, we read in the products. Now we're going to read in orders that are coming in from a website. So what you do is say, instead of spark.read, you say spark.readStream. So one change, read stream, and then you're also going to have write stream when you were doing. Specify the schema, just like you did it in the previous lab. Here, you're specifying the trigger. So I'm saying max files per trigger. I'm specifying one file at a time that I'm going to be listening and processing. And then I'm specifying the path. If you don't use Databricks, you would specify the full WASP path or the connection. What I'm going to do is I'm also going to put this side by side on the other so that it shows the Event Hub example. Event Hub is a little bit more definition that you have to do. You have to define like policy name, policy key, how do you actually connect to this? And this just went away. So I'm saying, okay, I want to connect to this Event Hub namespace. This is GBB workshop. I have my policy keys that are defined, and I'm listening to Event Hub name called orders. Now the code, only the options change and format. So I'm saying spark.readStream, I'm specifying the format. It's going to be Event Hubs. For Kafka, it's going to be Kafka. And then you specify the options that are particular to that source. So here I define all my policy name, keys, everything else that was required. Now, this is where I'll point out in a second, it's going to be slightly different than a vanilla Apache Spark, because some of the visualizations that we're going to see only comes from the Databricks. But you can do the same thing in regular Apache using Jupyter or Zeppelin or other notebooks.
You'll go back to your user.
Let me actually switch this to... Give me a second. I'll switch this. I think that's the one that was giving me grief on mine. While this is doing, I'll kick this off and I'll come back. What is the question? I'm sorry.
No. It's about the cluster.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, so I switched the cluster. My cluster one is the one that they're working on right now, so I switched to the newly created cluster that I have up and running. So let's take a look at a little bit of this in more detail. So I actually ran, before this workshop, I ran a producer that sent a whole bunch of JSON messages to an Event Hub. So this is going to be listening to from input stream. It's going to cast that as a string right now. We're going to need to convert it to a JSON in a second, but what I want to show you is just the raw format that it's actually coming in. So when I'm viewing this, I said display data frame. Just like how we did in lab number 3, we said display the data frame. This now is actually showing me. I'm processing this number of records, and this is my input versus the processing rate. I'm going to cancel this for now. But here's my JSON messages that are actually flowing in. So I have my order ID, product ID that's being ordered, user ID, quantity, discount, and a whole bunch of other stuff that's actually coming in as part of JSON. Remember, the whole goal, why are we actually showing this, is we're going to be joining the products with the orders. We want to create a dashboard that's going to visualize in real time what the hell is actually happening to our inventory and to our sales. So we want to show in live view what are the best products. So you're monitoring, I don't know, a Black Friday sale. This would be a perfect example. So what we need to do is now let's convert the JSON string into columns of Spark data frame. So I'm defining now the order ID, the product ID, user ID, quantity, discount. So we defined the schema, and what we're going to do, let me make this slightly bigger. So we had almost the same thing before, input stream.select, and we did a body cast on string. Now we're saying do a JSON operation and specify the schema that I defined earlier. Give it an alias for the fields that we want, and we're selecting everything. So not getting into the deep of the streaming, but I want you to see the possibility of sort of the end-to-end solution. What it did is it defined that data frame with everything that we have. So we have a data frame that looks exactly the same as in lab number 3, except now it's orders. Now, this is going to make a lot more sense. Before, we saw a JSON output here. This, everything was just a body. We really need to interact and actually do something with this. Boom. Data is now pumping in. I'm able to read. So I have my order IDs, product ID, user ID, quantity. What do you think is going to happen next? I'm going to register this data frame as a temporary table. And now I can use a simple SQL to join my products and orders using a regular SQL statement. Think about the power of that. I'm going to skip this for now. So the first example, they're actually showing it using the PySpark data frames. And then I'll show you an example of how to do it using SQL. So this is what you probably were learning the whole day in the morning. You're doing data frame, group by, product ID. So that's our orders that are coming in. I want to aggregate it and do a summary on the quantity. So group by, do a summary on the quantity, rename the column to total units by product, and order by total units by product. That's one way. We're going to execute this. Now, this is where it's going to get more interesting. This is where the display, the widgets are going to be more useful. If you do, let's say, like HD Insight or Jupyter, you will need to use other streaming visualization techniques. But this display knows how to interact with streaming as well. So this initializes, and now we're going to be able to see both the tabular and the actual different charting capabilities of this as well. So here we have our query coming in. And once this comes in, give it a second. So our data. Voila. So all I switched, you can view it in tabular format. This is product ID by total units by product. So within the plot options, I'm saying my key is a product ID and total units that are being sold. Now, this might be pretty useful if you were an expert in product IDs. But if you're not an expert on product IDs, and notice the chart is actually changing as the data is actually piping in, this is dynamically being reloaded. I don't have to do anything. The part of the beauty of Databricks is that I can take this cell and publish it as a chart. I don't need a Tableau or anything else. I can convert this notebook and make it a live dashboard. I haven't talked about it because we're not trying to, but nice kind of for future of this product is that I can take this, publish it out, and give it to my manager, to the CEO, whoever it wants to. You can see this right away, essentially. And Olivia is having too much fun with support. Here I am struggling, and he's like, yeah, everything's going great. So just like I showed you in lab number 3, register data frame as a temporary view, saying create a streaming table. Now, all I have to do is percent SQL select star from streaming table. And this will show the same thing that you were seeing earlier in a tabular format. Now, probably I should have renamed this to an orders so that it's a little bit better. And this might be Olivia's. So now it's showing you all the information in a table, tabular format.
So that table contains only that batch that you are processing, right?
In that minute, yeah. Well, this table is going to show you everything. I mean, it's going to go away. The HTML widget takes it away, essentially, because I think it shows 2,000, I think it's 2,000 rows max. But it's processing. Right now, everything. So for those that are familiar, everything that's happening right now to vanilla Apache Spark, what the display operation is doing, it's writing out to dot memory. So when you do this, this is actually writing out to memory, and then this HTML grid is reading from memory. But you could have wrote it out to a file system. You can say .write and write it out. So if, when you're doing this, let's say using like Hadoop, Apache Spark, you would write out to memory, you would download this and visualize it. You can still do the same thing. It's just display is like a magic command that behind the scenes that does a conversion from PySpark to a local pandas data frame and then converts it to a chart. So pre-installed.
Is it showing the most recent first,
Yes, it would be coming as the most recent.
What about CEP?
What is it?
CEP and streaming.
CEP, complex event processing? You can. So complex event processing, we haven't showed, but maybe in the morning session, you guys done user-defined functions or something? Have you done user-defined functions? A little bit. So you can create a user-defined function or for a regular function, and you can apply to it within PySpark or even within a SQL. So you can apply, let's say you pass in the columns that are actually coming in, and you can do like windowing functionality, like aggregate or individual. So based on that, it'll say if a device sensor heat temperature is greater than 100, do something. You know, create a new field, send out a message. You can do
time series stuff. I want to see rate of change over time.
Yes, there is windowing. It does support windowing functionality. And there is different. This is not showing any of this, but there is windowing and aggregate functionality. So this shows the same thing. Quantity, total units by product, and priming ID. So I'm not going to run this, as this is the same thing. But the interesting thing that I wanted to show is streaming joins. So this is, I'm reading in the file that we wrote out in lab number 3. This is all of the products that were stored as Parquet. Now I'm going to join them to the stream. So I have now products, and I have the orders. So streaming data frame and products. They're now getting merged, and now I can do a display on this operation. And if you notice, it's going to say product ID, order ID, and it's also going to have now product number, color, everything. So now I finally have, instead of product IDs, I can visualize and show you a chart of all of this information coming in together. Yep?
To his point about windowing functions and UDFs, is there anything in the works with respect to windowing functions being able to be used on custom written functions on data sets? Because currently they can't be used because there's a superclass of the function window there that doesn't let you do that right now.
I don't know. Don't want to bullshit you. You know? No? Wait, you don't say that? I thought you monitored this. So there you go. So now I have a product ID. And I have to, let me see, do I have something better? Yeah, I'll have a little bit better visualization. But right now, this one is doing tabular. Now we're going to do a nice kind of a dashboard, streaming dashboard, revenue by product name. So this is doing a data frame, join, grouping by name, quantity times the standard cost, and ordering this. For the sake of time, here's the visualization that's actually going to get piped out. And this shows you, okay, what is the percentage and everything that's actually running through. I'll kick this off while we look at other stuff, but I want to make sure that we cover other topics. Now, did everybody get the GitHub, or somebody is still missing the GitHub that I shared earlier with where you can download all of this? I'll put it up at the end of the session as well.
There's a few clusters that are, there's three or four that are booted, and there's four that are booting. The other ones, they are shut down, and they will stay shut down for now. So if you can log on to one of those when they're there, if you want to run this now, that's something that you could do. But there's a few things in the backlog that you'd have to run before you are able to run the stream.
Oh, come on. What did I do? And notice, this chart should be changing. Right now, Microsoft Surface Book is at the top. Every periodically, this changes, the percentages are changing. This is actually a live event that's reading in from the event hubs and processing and merging all of this information from our master products. Any questions on this? I think it's pretty cool. Now, after you visualize, typically you don't just want to visualize this. You want to actually store the results as well. So how do you do it? You write out the stream. So you take the data frame, this statement repartition that just coalesces everything to a single one so that it writes out as a single. Typically, you wouldn't want to do this. This is just for the example. Write stream, format parquet, and you specify the location. And it's going to write every 15 seconds. So it says trigger, write out every 15 seconds, and now my stream that I had running is going to be written out to the WASP file system. And it's just going to keep appending to that file system as it goes. So this is the example that took us all the way from reading in the ETL job. That was our products table, our streaming right into orders. We processed it, visualized it, and wrote out the results back. So this is how you would typically, you can have visualization and the same job writing out to different output as well as a sync.
Is it writing appending to the same file every 15 seconds or creating a new file?
No, it would actually create, if you notice here, it's writing out to multiple parquet files. And this job is going to keep running. Now, the one thing to note, the clusters, they have auto-shutdown capability. Auto-shutdown capability only applies, let's say, if you don't do anything for, let's say, 2 hours, that's fine. But if you're running a streaming job, your cluster is always going to run. So if you run any of these notebooks on your environment, make sure you shut down the actual cluster. Because once you run a streaming job, the cluster does not get shut down. Yes, that the job is down. So if I click cancel, that shuts down the running clusters, but I can take a look. So within this cluster, it will show me, and notice it's actually resizing right now. That's pretty interesting. So right now, it's growing to node 7 because I have a lot of data and a lot of information that's actually pumping through. It's resizing, and it increases to 7 nodes on mine. But here, you can see under the notebooks what is actually running. And it's saying, okay, this is running, and this is what's actually occupying. So within my write job, let me find this. I can actually show you the number of jobs that are actually being created. So if you expand this, this is, you probably saw this in the earlier session. There's a Spark UI that you can open. Where is it? Spark UI here. It's still not started, but there is a way, Spark Jobs. So you can actually see what's happening within the cluster, and it will have a whole bunch of small, so this is for one particular job that's actually being displayed. This will show you every single thing that's been happening and all of the jobs that's been running. So here's job 16. It's going to keep creating new jobs that are actually running. Now, to quickly show, there is a way to also connect to the Apache Spark JDBC endpoint. It uses the Spark Thrift Server. So whether you use, let's say, Hadoop, they've used the same concept that they might have a high availability. But you have a Hive Thrift Server that's running on a particular port. Within Databricks, it's actually exposed through HTTPS. The different configurations are different. I'll leave this as a slide here because it can show you how to integrate to it. For Apache Spark, it's going to be different. So you actually will connect to a dedicated port, like, say, 10,000, 100,000, 1, or 100,000. That's on an Apache Spark, so depending on what port is configured. But all it is like everything that you have configured, you'll be able to connect. So if I open up my Power BI, I'll be able to see my tables and products that are running. actually. I'll hold this off until we finish the ALS example because I want to make sure that we get this. But I'll show you how to do this because we need to connect a token. On this one, I need to, since I switched the environments, I need to get the right token. I don't have it right now. All but three, okay. But I'll come back to it in a second. All right. So, coming closer to the end. In this portion where we're putting our data science hat on, essentially, we're going to train on the data that's been our historical. So the streaming scenario is not going to be affecting. You could actually run it as well and run on a streaming job that I'll talk to you in a second. But there's going to be two parts. Within the data science, you have to first train your model on historical data, and then you can run your models as a batch mode. So this is, let's say, I want to run it on the full data set, or you can also run it within a streaming use case. So as data is coming in, you can run your predictive models as well. And you can easily do it by using the UDF functions, essentially, to register your predict function and apply it as part of your streaming job that's coming in. But we're going to be taking a look at how to build. I'm not a data scientist. Olivier is the expert machine learning expert, so I'm going to direct. But the idea is that we're training data against the historical data. We're going to be taking a look at products and orders and what the users have been ordering. And based on that, we're going to suggest the products that should be recommended as the user comes in. So when the user logs in, you log in and you see the products that you want to display on the top header page. So this is essentially the scenario. So once we actually train the model, we're going to run it against our whole set of users. And for those users, we're going to save the results back into, let's say, a NoSQL or a relational database or a file store, saying, OK, now for this user, show product X, Y, and Z. So when he logs in, it's going to look up, your web app is going to come in, communicate to your NoSQL or relational data store, take that information, and display those products. Make sense? You guys are tired. I've been talking a lot. I can stop talking. Well, I'm almost done. So, but we should be... No, this is using ALS algorithm, which is the recommender, so which is going to be not a classifier, right? No. So this is going to be part of collaborative filtering. So first thing, hold on. I'm going to switch to my cluster, the one that's running well. So we're loading in a products rating. Once again, going back to our WASP, we're going to display the products. This shows for product ID, user ID, and the rating. So typical kind of a Netflix scenario that you probably are familiar. So you have, you're the user, and you have the products, which are the movies. This is going to be the same thing for the e-commerce, using the same algorithm. So I have display product ratings. First, we want to take a look how much data do we actually have. So this says we have product ratings count. We have 88,000. Fairly small data set, but this gives us at least an opportunity to take a look. So we're going to take a look and do the joins using the historical data. So we're going to load a small data set of product shirt instead of the full to make it go a little faster. And this is going to look exactly the same as we saw in lab 3. Next, we're going to apply collaborative filtering based on the user IDs and the products. And in our scenario, it's not binary. We have 1 to 5 value, essentially. 5 we like, 1 we don't like. Based on that, we're going to make the recommendation. So we're going to use the Apache Spark ML pipeline implementation of ALS. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to split the product ratings into 3 categories. We're going to have a test, a training, test, and validation. So how do you do it? You say product ratings, this is our data frame, random split, and we're saying for 60%, that's going to be our training, validation is going to be 20%, and test is going to be 20%. And we're specifying a seed so that every time I run, it's going to give me the same results, so that it's just repeatable. So if I take a look at all of these, they're going to be exactly the same. Product ID, user ID, rating. Now when I run display training, this is a subset of a full data frame. Next thing that I'm doing is I want to inject some of my ratings. So I'm saying for my user ID 0. So I'm just this is something that I'm going to use to validate. What kind of a product do I like? And I'm saying, okay, for my user ID, I like product ID 1 and I like 5. And the example is essentially most of them are going to be PC products, not a Mac product. So probably in this room, I'll get a boo. But let's take a look. So I created this data set, but it's not a Spark data set. So what I need to do is actually convert it into a data frame. So I'm taking my rated products, creating a data frame out of it, and applying the columns that are actually here. So now my ratings data frame, I have the product ID, user ID, and rating. And if I join it to my product's description, I can take a look what kind of products do I actually like. So for user ID 0, product 1, this is an HP, I have a Microsoft, and I have some Apples as well. I think I changed it actually from the original example that was there. I do like Macs actually.
If based on user ID as one of the factors, then these are all the products that you bought in the past. So that's not really driver filtering. Because these are all based on the products you already bought.
So right now it's saying this is the historical part. Right. And then I want to see, give me what I'm gonna like as well. So what are gonna be the future ones based on this what is it?
I mean if it's based on a user ID should not be.
But it's for me. Like, I want to know. So this is simulating when, after the model is going to be built. So for right now, this section should be moved all the way to the bottom. So I'm saying, me as I came in, let's say, as a new Netflix user, you know the first thing they do, they ask you, what kind of movies do you like? Please click a couple of selections. They're saying, I like James Bond, like Bond movies. I like action, comedy. You select the users. And then based on that, they will make a recommendation. So you give a little bit of a historical information, and based on that, now you're going to get a recommendation.
Based on what other people?
Yes, based on what other people recommended. So now, I ran this. Now I'm saying, okay, take my my ratings and join it to the training. We're going to apply the alternate least squares. I'm not going to get into the details of the algorithm, but we're essentially initializing a new ALS learner, and we're saying, okay, set prediction column, that's going to be the prediction, that's going to be the output. User column is user ID, item column is the product ID, ratings is rating, and then this is specific to the algorithm itself. Seed is once again for repeatability, set maximum iterations how many times. So I wanted to go pretty fast, so I only chose 5, and some regularization parameters and ranking. Next step is I'm saying, okay, let me create an evaluator. I want to see how well it's going to do. And the evaluator that I'm going to use the root mean square error. So root mean square is a standard way of seeing how close am I to the actual label. So let's run this. This will take a couple of seconds. Now I'm saying, okay, train on this 80,000 records with my ratings data frame. Fit it. Now let's see how well did I do against the validation, against the 20% held out data set. So I'm going to take the model that I had. I'm going to transform it against the validation data frame. And now we'll be able to see, once this comes back, you see rating is 5, our prediction was 3.64. Here's ratings 5, 5.97. So our predictions sometimes close. This is not a production. This is just showing you the capabilities of what you can do. Remember, if you take away the one thing from this class and probably the class earlier, is that Spark is just your Swiss Army knife. Some things could be done better with a standalone screwdriver. Some things could be done with a standalone hammer. But this is the one tool that can be easily done all within the same framework. And it makes your job as a developer slightly easier. So this is what I would say you get out of this session. Now, let me get recommendations for all users. And I want to see my recommendation based on my user ID 0. So I'm going to display the products that are recommended for me. So I'll get a product ID and the rating ID. So this is the information that I would write out to your NoSQL or whatever data store you would use to access with your web application. I haven't built a web app, but this is where it would actually come out. So now we have our products. I'm filtering based on user ID 0, and we're also going to join it to the full products data frame. So the full products data frame is the one that has our product descriptions. So now I want to see what is the product ID and which product was actually recommended to me. So this is for my user, product ID that got recommended laptops, HP. This is the ratings. This is one of the higher ones that got recommended. I didn't sort it. This is what we would recommend for me as the end user. So I know I'm seeing some people dropping off right now, and I'm trying to keep it close to the 5 o'clock hour to make sure that I wrap up by this. But if I take this all the way back to the beginning, you're seeing essentially an end-to-end picture of how you take it from both your ETL, your streaming, if you want to do live dashboarding, I'll show you in a second how to do the Power BI, and how you do predictive analytics with it. The one piece that it's not showing is how do you actually apply this model. What you would have to do is you would take this model, save it in an exported format, and then you would actually have to load it as part of your streaming job. I have it in another lab environment, but not in this one, that can actually load this. Olivia saw it last week.
Sorry?
You saw it last week at a client site. Let me pause. I have like 10 minutes that I want to make sure that I give enough time to answer questions. So shoot any questions that you want.
Schedule.
Yeah.
So how does this all get like deployed into production? Like, I'm just wondering, like, is there a version control, or the previous session they mentioned essentially like compiling it and like deploying it.
Yep. Yep.
My background is we use Airflow, so we like kind of basically have everything in Python. So,
yep.
But don't really do any streaming, so.
So I'll give you the there's the Databricks version way that I'll show you, and there's the just vanilla Apache Spark, how you can do it. So with Databricks, this is one of the other nice things, is that it actually allows you to choose a scheduler. You can say, I want to run a particular notebook, so like the notebook that I just created, let's say, and I don't know, I want to run my streaming job. You can select it, and then I can choose, I can pass it parameters, I can add it dependent libraries if I need to spin it up. I can create new clusters, or I can attach to an existing cluster. I can give it a schedule, or I can run it right now. Databricks makes it simple. You can also trigger them this job. Let's say if you've created, you said Airflow. So you'll be able to hook this up using a REST API. So everything that you have has a REST API behind the scenes and a documentation here that you can take a look. So it makes it very easy. If you're using vanilla Apache Spark, yes, you would either do like a, depending, once again, if you have an existing like a Hadoop cluster, you might already have something called Livy that also does a very similar kind of thing. It has a REST API that lets you schedule the jobs. But typically, you would, if Scala, you would have to compile it into a jar and do submit this way. So.
And what about like version control? So like, is there, you have all this in a repository, but is it saved as like notebook files?
So this actually has integration to GitHub as well. So this can be hooked to the Git. I don't like this Git integration. What I would do is actually use the CLI. There is a better ways, and you can actually, if you Google or Bing, the how do you do continuous integration with Databricks, Azure Databricks or regular Databricks, I will show you how to use the CLI command. So everything that I'm doing here can be done through the web UI, and also can be more can be done using the CLI, and that's where you would do it. Git and Bitbucket.
So in other words, it knows these particular URLs. You couldn't do it to a local Git.
This one will not. But if you use the command line, then you can easily download and extract. So that would be part of your process and continuous. You can integrate it to Jenkins and everything else. I think they plan on, especially I think they're planning on introducing the TFS equivalent. But everything that if you're going to be putting in, use the, if you're going to be using, let's say, like Databricks, use the Databricks CLI. If you're doing your regular Apache Spark on Hadoop, you just do everything else that you're doing. That's going to be just part of your notebook, so you check it out and then you push it. So this just makes it a little bit more seamless. Yeah, so when you take a look, let's say anything that we're looking at, you can export, let's say, for instance, you can export as a DBC archive or as a source file. So if I export it as a source file, that just downloads it as a Scala file right now in this example. Whatever the language that you chose, that's what it's going to export it out. So when you actually would see it in Git control, it would be just raw, like Scala or Python files with magic commands embedded. Because you can take these same notebooks, they'll be, you can visualize them. So like for instance, DBC cannot be viewed, but if you've exported, I haven't. I have put in just the export essentially on DBC, but if I show, let's say, I think. Yeah. So it just has a bunch of magic commands, and then it also has the magic commands are commented out, so everything that's there, I think everything here is actually was just a markdown cell. Even though this is Scala, let me take something a little bit more interesting. So let me take this streaming export. And this one is interesting because you can export as an IPython notebook. So if you're using like Jupyter or something like that, you can easily view it. And when you check it into GitHub, you can view it as the actual, you can view the notebook itself as well. And this is stored as JSON. But if you do the format.python export a source file, this should generate just the Python. So if I do this one, this will just have the code. There you go. Everything else is commented out, and you can take this and run it as a regular PySpark submit.
Yeah. If you have conflicts, you can manually merge. Or...
Yes.
I mean, yeah, it's in Git.
Any other questions? No? For, yeah, go ahead.
So, like, we do a lot of micro-batching. We're trying to do streaming. So what about, and you mentioned triggering jobs with Airflow, which I like, we do that with some stuff. What about, like, a streaming job? So, like, one of the things we tried was, like, monitoring the MySQL bin log with Kafka.
Mm-hmm.
How would I have, like, a streaming job? Like, would I just run it through here and it would just stay running?
So just like, typically streaming jobs are running. So just like I was showing with the event hubs,
yeah.
This thing for you is going to be exactly the same way. So when you actually define it...
yeah, that looks like the stuff that we put into Kafka, too, for MySQL.
Yep.
It
will be just the options are going to be different, essentially.
So
but
I ran this in the demo, and it just kind of stays running. Is that, like, how do I know that's always running? Like, do I have to go look at the running jobs to see it?
So within the cluster,
yeah.
If you're here, they will show you actually what's running. And it shows you the notebooks that are running right now. See,
okay.
Status running. So this one is running at this point of my cluster.
That's kind of what I'm wondering about, like...
Completely separate. You
separate.
Have to make sure that the...
Yeah.
You put it in your own separate queue. Make sure you allocate... You don't carve up your whole... Unless you want to, you specify, okay, for your particular job, I only want to give it 5%. And then you submit the job into that particular Yarn queue.
Yeah. You can do similar things with AWS Elastic EMR.
Mm-hmm.
My thing went down. Please alert someone to double check the Yarn logs or the application logs, or you just bring it back up and it fails again, and bring it back up and it fails again, and bring it back up, and you're wondering why is it continuing. But yeah, you're managing the driver completely separate. You just have to keep it running.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So, I have a quick question about the patching thing.
Yep.
Like,
different session, but it's fine. I don't know much about pressure flank, though.
Yeah, but to me, I actually don't know a lot about either. But when would you choose? I mean, how would you make the decision to use a spot streaming versus a caching?
So pre-version 2.3, Apache Spark only had micro-batching. So if you needed continuous streaming, Apache Flink or Apache Storm was your selection. Now, structured streaming is here, so if you desire that, you can go. I would test out the two, honestly. You know, I think the answer is always depends. But if you're looking for simplicity and you're not looking for the, I don't know, highest throughput or something particular, you don't have a very kind of edge case scenario, Apache Spark streaming should work pretty well for you. It's a very popular framework. And once again, I apologize for the not being hands-on. The environment is up, and you guys can take it. How many clusters do we actually have now, Olivia?
I think 8. Sure.
We have 8 clusters, so technically you can go run them through right now. The support
seven.
Did get them. 7 clusters are up. So what you would do is run, just like you cloned it, you can run it, just choose the cluster that your user ID belongs to. So you can go through and run it. Apologize that it came in a couple of hours late.
Is it possible to export the trained model using in a REST API, for example? Or
yep. So there's... losing my voice. If you want to export the model as a REST API, Microsoft actually has MML Spark that actually...
You can run it in a container, essentially.
You can run it in a container, but there's even MML Spark that spins up a basic HTTP server
okay.
as well.
Yeah.
As part of Apache MML Spark. So Apache MML Spark. So this actually gives a very basic. If you want something more scalable, you would go to Kubernetes AKS and export it out to there. But AKS, this gives you four, where's GPU, HD inside, contributing.
Does that run on the
No, it can run on anything. So it can actually, run on data science VM.
It's a container.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
Let me see. HTTP. Ah, there we go. Use HTTP on Apache Spark. So this one is pretty lightweight. If you want to go down the full container service, you can do that. The beautiful thing is IBM, Microsoft, Hortonworks, Cloudera, Databricks, they're all investing so much into it, there's a lot of choices. So I would be always looking out. You try to go the Apache neutral way, and most of them are Apache. It's just the how much community and what company is backing. So this is obviously, I think, mostly Microsoft. So you can take a look, but if it's something you're doing easily, you can spin it up and go with it. Thank you, guys.